If you're rocking to get up and it's not a rocking chair, it's time for the Joint Relief Institute. Fast relief, covered by Medicare. 708-888-0000, as in zero pain.
We bring in the great Eric Zorn from the Picayune Sentinel. Eric, how you doing, my friend?
I'm good, John. Nice to talk to you.
Yeah, it's good to talk with you as well. You have spurned on quite a conversation we've all been having before you got here. The story you wanted to chat about the feds banning humorous electronic messages on the highways, that has fired people up.
I don't get it at all. It's one of the reasons that I even bother to look at those signs.
Right.
Is they're funny and distracting. I defy them to come up with one accident that's been caused by somebody looking at a sign like that. I don't get it at all. And I haven't seen any further reporting on it.
Yeah, and we were... The one I saw said it was a 1,500-page manual, which seems crazy that something would have to be that long to tell people what to do in terms of putting their signs on. But we were kind of comparing it earlier to advertising and the way that humor or emotion, because sometimes they're not funny. Sometimes they are like serious reminders, or Heidi Stevens once wrote about on Mother's Day talking about mom will be okay if you're late, not okay if you're dead. Those things that can evoke emotion quickly are often much more... lasered into your brain then.
Yeah, if you're going to put up safety messages, it seems like they really ought to be at least something that'll catch your attention, right? And instead of like, please drive slowly, or, you know, yield to other cars or whatever, it's like it becomes part of the background and then you don't even think about it anymore. And I don't understand it at all. Have you reached out to the Federal Highway Traffic Safety Administration or anybody about this?
No, I don't have them on speed dial, Eric. I'm so sorry. Have you?
I haven't, but I plan to. I'm going to call in and see what I can find out. Yeah, it just doesn't make any sense to me because, again, I don't see people, you know, taking their eyes off the road for more than a second. As far as distractions go in the car, this has got to be way, way down there, almost to zero. And if they wanted to crack down on, say, cell phone use in cars, right, or even those display screens in cars, I find those to be somewhat distracting, you know, where you got to punch a bunch of different buttons to get your Bluetooth hooked up, and you got to advance to the next chapter in your audiobook, or find another podcast, or find another radio station. Those kind of things are much more distracting than these highway signs. I don't get it at all. It feels like Big Brother to me.
Yeah, I always felt like the Dennis Rodman hair-changing billboard was more distracting on the Eisenhower than anything else. And someone texted in about like a Hooters billboard, like, come on. And someone said, well, billboards are protected by the First Amendment. Well, tell that to Maine, Vermont, Alaska, and Hawaii. They don't allow billboards on their roadways. And we've had people texting and saying, you won't know how wonderful it is to drive until you drive somewhere without billboards.
Yeah, that is true. There was a big movement years ago in Michigan where people were going around cutting down billboards, or vandals who were going down I-94 and in the middle of the night and using chainsaws to cut down billboards because they're so ugly, basically. I don't think this is their distraction. They're just ugly.
Yeah.
And but, you know, as far as, I mean, it's this humorless Big Brother is what it's how I'm looking at this. It's like you've got this method for conveying to people the need to keep your eyes off the road, keep your eyes on the road, keep your eyes off your phone, slow down, give some space to the car in front of you. All these messages that we've heard over and over again since driver's ed, and they're putting it to us in a new way, a new humorous way that makes you pay attention to it again. I don't understand it at all.
I think it's more distracting when you get an Amber Alert and you're trying to write down the license plate or commit it to memory for the Chevy Malibu DM844. And then by the time you're even able to figure out what it is, you know, that's pretty distracting. All right, I want to pivot a little bit, Eric. We haven't had a John Williams show since this happened. It might seem like old news to some, but what happened at the Bulls game Friday night? Were you watching or see any of the Ring of Honor ceremony with the booing of Jerry Krause, which then unfortunately transitioned over to an image of his widow, in which point fans were obviously a little egg on their face? What'd you think?
Oh, it was horrible. It was a horrible situation, and the Bulls probably should have seen it coming. You know, Michael Jordan made Jerry Krause into more of a villain than he deserved to be in that documentary series about him.
The Last Dance.
And the fans have never really, you know, Krause is this short, squat, white guy who's who wanted, I think, a little more credit than maybe he deserved for those six championships. But he did deserve some credit. He assembled that team. Now, did he prematurely disassemble it? Yeah, there's an argument there. But, I mean, he played a key role in building that championship. And Jordan didn't like him. Pippen didn't like him. I don't think the players respected him that much. But and if he were there, if you wanted to boo him, okay. But to boo his widow, my goodness, that was just so classless. But the other thing I think about it is that this is the chance that Chicago has to reevaluate its feelings about Jerry Krause. That in some ways, as painful as it was to his widow in the moment, in some ways this is going to be good for Jerry Krause's legacy. I think that people are going to feel more kindly toward him going forward. They're going to step back, and as a lot of the columnists have done so far, talk about his what he meant to that franchise and how he does deserve to a place in this ring of honor.
Yeah.
And I don't know that he would have, if he had just gotten a polite smattering of applause, I don't know that that would have happened. I don't know if people would have changed how they feel about him. And I think that this, in the long run, will be good for Jerry Krause's legacy and good for his reputation, even though I'm sure it was just a mortifying moment for his widow.
Yeah. I mean, he did. Obviously, he wasn't around when they drafted Jordan, but he traded to make sure that he got the draft pick for Pippen. He brought in Horace Grant and then Bill Cartwright. And then he redid it again, bringing in Rodman in the second team as well. And of course, obviously, people remember that he essentially, I mean, it was weird to have a head coach say, this is my last year because they're kicking me out of town. That was a strange way to end it. I will just also say that I don't think that the crowd, as soon as the widow came on the screen, the crowd action changed. I don't think they booed the widow. I think that she caught the smattering of lingering boos. I'll give Bulls fans that credit, Eric.
I wasn't there, so I didn't catch the timing of it, but she certainly seemed to be very wounded by the response. And it could have been as simple as having them introduce the widow first. You know, say, please say hello to, I'm forgetting your first name.
Right, right.
Say hello to someone who's the widow of the late Jerry Krause. I think that the fans might have let those boos stay in their throats rather than express them the way they did if they had known that they were going to be booing a widow in a situation like that. I don't know. Because you say that once they realized that, the boos quieted down pretty quickly.
Yeah, I did. And I talked to a couple of people that were at the game. And, you know, we shared the production team, the amazing production team at the United Center, who puts on events and does things on the scoreboard. And they are award-winning for both the Bulls and the Blackhawks for the shows that they produce. I'm not just saying that because I get to be a small part of it on the Blackhawks side. But the people that I did talk to said that as soon as the widow came on the screen, there was an immediate, what did we just do? Which I guess is some credit to Bulls fans. But it's almost like booing Santa in Philly. I wonder if the Bulls will always be known as the fans that booed the widow, right?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's as big a story as booing Santa Claus, and it will pass. But again, I mean, I do think that as this fades into the rearview mirror, that people who knew and loved Jerry Krause will realize that this was a way for Chicago to come to appreciate him more, to think about his legacy more than just how Michael Jordan didn't like him.
Yeah,
and Michael Jordan used to tease him, and to realize that, you know, he does. You listed the players that he brought in, and that was really important. At one point, he said something like that organizations win championships, not players, or something like that.
Right.
Something that was very clumsily said, but he's right in some respects. Michael Jordan on his own was not going to win a championship. Michael Jordan was, I think he's still the greatest of all time, but he would not have been able to win those titles without the supporting cast around him. And you needed somebody to see what he needed around him and bring those players in and to take the Bulls from being a very good team to being a championship team. And they won six titles.
Yeah.
And you got to say that is not just Michael Jordan being really great. It's more than that.
Well, they also won. They won 55 games the year he wasn't there, I will say. And that's a lot for a team that lost the best player to ever play the game. And that is an organizational win and maybe something that should be remembered. Eric, I do just, before we go to break here, I am just curious. Pete and I were talking about this. Who boos at a game? Like, who does that? Are you a booer? Do you boo things that happen at a game? I can't imagine anything at a sporting event that would bring me to go, boo, what is that? Why do we do that?
I would never boo players. I'm not really much of a booer, but if I feel like a coach has made a bad coaching decision, where say for instance, you know, gone for two when he should have gone for one, or takes a knee right before halftime rather than making an attempt to score some points, I would give them that. I would say boo. That's a bad coaching decision. But I'm not going to boo a player.
Right. By the way, the widow's name was Thelma.
Thelma, right.
Thank you for the reminder, folks. All right, 312-981-7200, your thoughts. Someone also chimed in saying that don't you dare get rid of Amber Alerts. If your kid was missing, you'd scream into the high heavens. No doubt, they're important, and they've saved kids' lives, and there's evidence of that. I was just making the point that writing down a long license plate or trying to commit that to memory is just as distracting as reading a funny message on a sign. And that's to say it's not all that distracting, generally speaking, is the point I was trying to make.
Lindholm Roofing has appointments available now to provide you a complete roofing, siding, gutter, and tuck pointing inspection. Call 773-283-7675 or lindholmroofing.com. Tell them that Lou sent you. Lindholm Roofing, their family has your family covered.
Eric Zarn of the Picayune Sentinel joining me. John Hanson in for John Williams at 11:47. Okay, Eric, we had the Iowa caucus last night. Donald Trump, the winner, at about 52%. I didn't look at the final numbers. I'll have to pull those back up again. But over that 50% threshold, Ron DeSantis in second, Nikki Haley in third. Any takeaways from that?
Well, it was clearly really good news for Trump. Not just that he won by, you know, 30 points or so, but that he kept two rivals in the race. That a bad scenario for him last night would have been to have won by the same amount, but had it all gone to Nikki Haley or all gone to Ron DeSantis, so that there was only one competitor to face him in New Hampshire. That right now you're going to have DeSantis and Haley splitting the vote, at least through New Hampshire and South Carolina, because DeSantis has already rushed off to South Carolina to campaign, and it's Haley's home state, so she's not going to drop out before South Carolina. So, you know, they rush off to or Haley goes off to New Hampshire, and she might do very well there, but she's still going to split the anti-Trump vote with DeSantis. Ramaswamy, of course, dropped out, but Trump is going to be the leader, and he's going to take New Hampshire probably, and he's going to take South Carolina probably, as long as he's got two rivals splitting the anti-Trump vote. I don't see this as anything but great news for Trump last night.
Yeah, I would see it the same way. And a lot of people will say, well, you know, he's not the incumbent, of course, but in many ways in the Republican Party, he is the incumbent. And I've been seeing a lot of people on the news this morning, you know, people say, oh, well, you know, for an incumbent to only get 51%. And maybe there is some truth to that there is still, I guess, 49% of Iowa voters, a very conservative evangelical state that wanted someone else. But it doesn't mean that they wouldn't vote for him if he was the choice or the nominee, right? Like, I don't think that maybe some of them won't, but definitely not half of Iowans would do that. And let's also keep in mind that Ron DeSantis has been in Iowa for 2 years or a year and a half campaigning, essentially, over a year. And Nikki Haley's been in New Hampshire about the same amount of time. After those two states and South Carolina, maybe a little Haley love there because it's her home state. I mean, it is Trump territory the rest of the way.
Yeah, it's Super Tuesday where, you know, if Haley gets a ton of momentum, if you remember Joe Biden's win in South Carolina really propelled him, and he looked like he was in real trouble 4 years ago.
Yeah, but Eric, I don't mean to interrupt, but Joe Biden nationally still was polling at the top even after Iowa and New Hampshire, right? Like it wasn't 70%, but he was still the leader of most national polls at 35 to 40%. But go on, keep your point going, Eric. Sorry to interrupt.
I don't remember the numbers as well as you do, but I do remember that there was a lot of talk like Biden had to do well in South Carolina or the Democratic voters are going to start looking elsewhere. And
sure,
he did do well in South Carolina. But you know, one of the things that interested me was that the exit polling, CNN's actually entrance polling, they do entrance polling at the caucuses, they looked at white born-again or evangelical Christians, and they supported Trump 55%.
over DeSantis with 24 and Haley at 12 and Ramaswamy at 8. And that tells me that this whole conceit that, well, yes, they're evangelical Christians, they're conservative people, and they hold their noses and they vote for Trump because otherwise they'd have to vote for some, you know, Marxist Democrat, and they're not, liberal who's going to accept LGBTQ people. They can't have that. What this shows me is that the evangelical Christians in Iowa are on board with Trump, that this is not a moral majority. This is an amoral majority. These people don't care about Trump's indictments. They don't care about his appalling behavior. They don't care about anything but maintaining power. For some reason, they believe that Donald Trump best represents their values. And I don't I can't reconcile that. I would really love to hear from somebody who can say, like, yeah, I'm a conservative evangelical Christian. I consider myself a Christian who follows the teachings of Jesus. And I believe that Donald Trump is a better candidate than these other two. DeSantis and Haley are, as far as policy goes, they're basically indistinguishable from Trump, right? It's all about his personality.
Well, maybe it's more pragmatic for them, though, Eric. Maybe for them, you would say that, okay, they would say he's a twice divorced man who has, been found in a civil case to essentially be liable for a sexual assault against someone. They may say, yes, everyone has warts, but he is the vehicle that brought us the Dobbs decision, and he is the most likely person to keep that power. I don't think that's different than a lot of other groups that, hold their nose and vote for someone that gets them what they ultimately want, regardless of the messenger.
I totally see that when it comes down to a binary choice, to a final election, where you're choosing between two candidates, and you say, well, yeah, the candidate of my party is a flawed individual. We're all flawed individuals, but what am I going to do? Vote for this other person who doesn't represent my values at all? I get that. I don't see why they believe Trump is going to win, why he's a winner, why he's the most likely winner. I think that Nikki Haley, Ron DeSantis are more likely to beat Joe Biden than Donald Trump. Trump is a damaged candidate when it comes to independent voters. And I know some of the national polls are showing right now that he's leading Biden, but I don't think that those polls are going to hold up. The Republican Party under Trump has lost just about every election since 2016. And I don't see him as a particularly strong candidate. I think if you're a pragmatic Republican, you're not supporting Trump. You're looking for someone who is actually going to be the future of the party, is going to bring the party back to its roots. I get he gave him Roe v. Wade, right? He put three conservative justices on the court and he overturned Roe v. Wade. But what's he going to do for them now? He threatens the pillars of democracy. I don't think he doesn't stand for anything that they supposedly stand for. Yeah. So I don't understand that decision. And I would, like I said, I would love to hear from someone who says, like, yeah, well, yes, he's a very, very flawed individual who is clearly not a person of faith, clearly not someone who follows our teachings, but we're going to support him over DeSantis and Haley.
Right.
Who are much more so. I don't get it. It suggests to me that this is as much a cult now as a political party. So I'm a strong accusation, yeah. But it really feels that way to me.
You're not holding anything back here on a Tuesday morning, Eric.
Not on a Tuesday morning. I'm a crispy Tuesday morning.
Yeah, right.
Okay. Let it out.
I do want to ask you just on a general note. What's the deal with the Iowa caucus? Every 4 years. I mean, I don't think we still know who won the Democratic one. They do things even wonkier on the Democratic side for the Iowa caucus, where that if they put you on different sides of the room in different corners, and if your guy or gal doesn't have 15%, you go somewhere else. But, like, there was pictures last night, Eric, circulating all over the internet of people. They literally just put, like, their names in a popcorn, the name of their candidate in a popcorn bucket or in a Hy-Vee bag. And this from the party that claims that election interference is through the roof. And it's like, well, this doesn't seem to be the most technical way to do things. What's the deal with this thing?
No, it doesn't make any sense. And also, I didn't think it was smart or wise to for the networks to call the results of the caucuses while the voting was still going on. I mean, they call like 30 minutes after the doors closed at the caucuses. They were announcing the winner, and people still hadn't voted yet. They were still giving their little speeches in their little farmhouses or wherever they were gathering. It is a really quaint, old-fashioned way of choosing a candidate that is much more suited to small town America, where you get together and your party literally comes together and discusses the candidates, and then you vote on them. And that's just not how elections work anymore. And when you have a really, really cold day, I think they said 18% of Republicans turned out last night, which is
very low,
which is pretty good though for such a terrible night and such a burdensome way of voting. It's not like you get, you know, when you get these terrible turnouts in Chicago and you've got a pretty decent weather day and you've got all day to vote. These people have to give up their evenings and trudge out on a night to do this. I just think the whole thing needs to be reformed. I'm very glad that the Democrats have said nuts to that and that are just going to start with
South Carolina. I think they should do a national primary day and just be done with it. Eric, you wanted a Trump voter. I want to get someone on the line who called on in, and I appreciate that. Let's get Dan on. And Dan, you're on WGN. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, thank you very much. As I told your producer, I go back to the Wally Phillips days with your station.
Wonderful.
You guys do a great job.
We appreciate that. So what Eric wanted to know is, you know, first of all, and this is a very personal question. Do you consider yourself like a Christian or an evangelical Christian, Dan?
I'm a Catholic Christian.
Okay, so then Eric's question would be, why do you support Donald Trump if you don't think, or maybe you do think, that the morals don't line up with the religion that you follow? Go ahead.
No, let me tell you the reason why I support Trump. Number one, when he ran the country, when he was president before, he shut down the borders. We didn't have the problem with the immigrants that we're having now. If they were to come over here, they were to come over here in a legal way. Secondly, we had no problem with the economy. The economy was working very well. The markets were very well. He's a businessman, and he ran the country as a businessman. And that's why the people are going to vote for him this year.
And so you don't have any scruples, there it is, about perhaps some of his moral misgivings?
No.
Okay.
No.
All right. Hey, Dan, I appreciate the phone call. All right, there you go. That's Dan's opinion. Eric, I know you could have a retort that was 20 minutes long. We just don't have time for it. We're just about out of time.
Oh, you have to read the Picayune Sentinel where I respond to some of these kinds of charges. So
there you go.
Thanks, John. Nice talking to you.
You too. We'll talk again on the Mincing Rascals tomorrow. All right, let's take a break.
Oh, great.